The Seven Deaths of Evelyn Hardcastle introduced the world to the dazzling detective fiction of Stuart Turton. Now he's back with The Devil and the Dark
Quarter.
And after his barnstorming first appearance on Read On, shortly before Seven Deaths won the 2018 Costa First Novel Award, I was delighted to hear that Stuart was keen to return to talk about the new book.
So it's set in 1634 on a boat, a merchant ship that's travelling from Jakarta all the way over to Amsterdam on an 8-month voyage. But they set out to sea, and there's a motley list of passengers, as with Seven Deaths, my first book. I like a big ensemble cast. And this one's got the world's greatest detective in this period and his sidekick, and they're very sort of Sherlock Holmes and Watson duo. It has a noble woman with a secret. It's got her assorted family, her husband, who's this terrible man. He's a governor general of the place they've just left. It's got the captain. It's got the crew. Lots of different characters interacting, and everyone's got a secret. And they get on this ship, and they set out to sea, and then devilry begins to blight the voyage. So strange markings appear. Animals are butchered. Occult symbols begin to appear everywhere. And eventually, as there always is in my books, there's an impossible murder. Thankfully, as I said, there's a Sherlock Holmes character on board who could solve it, but he's shackled up, he's in chains, and you don't know what for, and nobody else does. But it's left to his Watson-style sidekick to solve the mystery in his stead, and that's kind of where the book kicks off. But then, as with Seven Deaths, like that concept belies a lot of twists and turns, and it jinks a few times and keeps slightly shifting genre as it moves along. So it's a lot of fun, I hope.
And you really capture the claustrophobia, the smells, the rather fetid atmosphere on board a long sea voyage. It actually felt very claustrophobic just reading that detail.
Yeah, thank you very much. I mean, I love detail in my books. Like, I love trying to get the reader as deep into that experience as they possibly can. I want them to sort of feel what my characters are feeling, and I want it to be a visceral experience. A lot of that came out of the research. It's based on a real boat, I should say, from a real shipwreck that happened in 1629. But they've rebuilt the boat that was wrecked, and you can go and visit it. It's in a port called Lillestad in Amsterdam, near Amsterdam. And it's a full replica. It works. They set it out to sail occasionally. And you can walk around it and sort of explore it at your own leisure. So I went out there and spent a weekend sort of pottering around that boat. And the first thing I noticed, because I'm 6'2", was how often I couldn't sort of unfurl myself in any part of the boat unless I was on deck. It was just too tight and too narrow. And I started reading accounts of the passengers, and it didn't matter who you were. It didn't matter how much money you would have. This journey would have been incredibly uncomfortable and unpleasant. And obviously, the poorer you were, the worse it would have been for you, because you would have been in a worse part of the ship. So it was really easy for me just to sort of begin to imagine this experience out to sea once I'd been on the boat. And as I say, like, I was really keen to make everybody as comfortable as I'd been.
And your detective, Sammy Pipps, is, as you say, rather perversely locked up and unable to do a huge amount of detection other than in his head, and it's left to his Watson-like sidekick Aarons Hayes to do all the footwork.
Yeah, you say perverse, that is the right word. It's because I grew up reading Agatha Christie, and when I read Christie, went through that back catalog, I moved on to Sherlock Holmes. I was reading Sherlock Holmes when I was about 12, and I just didn't fall for them. I didn't fall for those stories in the same way I'd fallen for Agatha Christie stories. And the reason I didn't is because of Sherlock Holmes as a character. I just never warmed to him. I never liked him. And I realised that was part of it. But it was that all these characters around him were just like always lauding him. He's like heroic and noble. He's none of these things. Everyone seemed to think he was amazing. But he only ever solved cases that were intellectually interesting to him. He never just helped anybody because it was nice to help people. He treated Watson like he was a stumbling buffoon. But Watson was a doctor. Like, he was a very intelligent man. He'd been to war. He was a hero. And everybody acts like he's a nincompoop. Then you've got Lestrade, who runs the world's foremost policing unit at that time, Scotland Yard. And he couldn't find a cat up a tree. It's bewildering. So I always had a problem with those things. And I think when I came to write the book, it kind of made sense to me to sort of like rectify the things that I hadn't liked about Sherlock Holmes, because I love the actual stories. They're always more adventures than cerebral mysteries like Christie. There's usually a quite good solution, but generally it's a lot of dashing around and pistol's been waved in the air and Sherlock Holmes boxing, or there's like tons of these like things going on. And I wanted all of that. I just wanted to sort of sort out my feelings towards Sherlock. And I did that by locking him up effectively and humbling him.
It's great fun, but you have the most amazing narrator. You have managed to get Julian Rhind Tutt to read the novel.
It's just fantastic. He narrates so many great crime books, which just kind of puts me in that company, which is just lovely. For me, my most confident part of writing a book is the day before I actually start writing, getting that blank page. And then every day after that, I get less confident in it until it finally comes out. And I think that's just weirdly my process. So things like that, like, you know, narrators of that quality are just, oh, they're just so helpful to get me believing in the book again.
And he's got that chuckle in his voice that makes you realise that whilst it's a gripping story, you shouldn't take it too seriously.
Oh, God, no, of course not. It's one of my books. Like,
Stuart Turton, it has been fantastic to gain these extra insights into The Devil in the Dark Water. I know it's going to find its way into an awful lot of people's Christmas stockings.
Oh, that's so kind. Thank you very much for having me on today. I really, really appreciate it.
The Devil in the Dark Water is out now in print, ebook, and, of course, that fantastic audiobook version narrated by the inimitable Julian Rhind Tutt. And if you'd like to hear my interview with Stuart about the seven deaths of Evelyn Hardcastle, you can download it as a podcast. Just search your usual podcast provider for Read On, the audiobook show.